This talk was recorded at Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society in Los Angeles and is freely offered for your enjoyment. For more information, please visit againstthestream.org.
We take a lot as given in this life. We take our bodies as given. We expect them just to be here. We take the world as a given. We take our views as given. And we really take the stories of ourselves and our suffering as given. And the Buddha didn't want to take anything as given, that it was a kind of investigation of all of the assumptions we've made about life. And the assumption was that if we can investigate these assumptions carefully and systematically in our own direct experience, there's more freedom to be had. And nowhere is there perhaps more suffering than around the stories of ourself. And one of my teachers says that we kind of adapt to the pain. We adapt to the pain of our self stories. And we wind up taking on these assumptions that we have about who we are in ways that we don't even recognize as assumptions anymore. We just take it as a given. This is who I am. These are my problems. This is how I suffer. And the meditative path is investigating this. And beginning to bring awareness to the stories of self-harshness and cruelty, really, we bring to ourselves. This is an interesting subject for me because in some ways I'm really gentle with myself. Like, I don't have a lot of negative stories going around in my head. And I mean I screw up all the time, but it's like not such a big deal. I don't get too down on myself. And it can seem, in moments, like I'm really gentle with myself. But every once in a while, I'll have this glimpse. And it's only a glimpse, really. But it's a glimpse of the freedom I would have if I were truly gentle with myself. Because the kind of harshness that I have in relationship to who I am, in some ways is so broad, it's so thoroughly flavored my experience of myself in the world, that I don't even notice it. It's a kind of given. It's a given. And it's shaped my life in profound ways. But it's hard to connect to. It's hard to connect to. About 4 years ago, I was sitting a retreat, and intensive sitting, long sitting periods. I was sitting extra. I was sitting a couple hours at a time without moving. Started to develop some really significant, as you would imagine, pain. And I was really, I knew, like, okay, this is not good. You know, like, this is more pain than you're supposed to experience in a meditation retreat. And there was a kind of unwillingness to accept my vulnerability. And I just kept pushing. And kept sitting, and kept sitting, and kept sitting. And eventually it felt like the cushion I was sitting on was like a jagged sack of rocks. It was really, really painful. And I just wouldn't listen. And I did something that's actually very hard to do. I hurt myself meditating. It's like, takes really high level of, we could call it stupidity or self-harshness to do that, but I accomplished it. And for a couple years I could not sit, literally. I was practicing standing meditation, and it slowly got better, and then I did it again. I had sat a couple retreats, several retreats in there, and then I did it again, and I pushed again, and it was like I hadn't learned the lesson of that self-harshness. And mixed in with this is a love of practice and a willingness to push the limits and explore, but it's mixed in with some real immaturity and obliviousness to my own well-being. And so the consequence of this kind of self-harshness has been that except when I'm teaching or I'm going to be disruptive to a group, I've been practicing standing meditation for the last 4.5 years. And I still haven't fully learned the lessons of that. I'm still beginning to soften in some ways to my own vulnerability. And my suggestion is that much of our self-hatred and cruelty to ourselves can actually become the source of self-care and love. That if we look closely at the nature of our ammunition, the ways in which we're harsh with ourselves, it's a kind of heart closing to our vulnerability. The heart closing to the fact that we can make mistakes, that we're very sensitive, that we're so dependent on others, that we can suffer. And the heart closes around that and hardens into the story of what we do wrong. But the same experiences that lead to the heart closing can lead to its opening. That Buddhism, at some level, is this acknowledgement of this basic vulnerability, that we're really vulnerable to this world, to other people, that we can be harmed, we have the capacity to suffer. And the ordinary reaction to that is to tighten up and try and insulate ourselves from this kind of pain. And self-love is really softening to our vulnerability and dependence. Can people think of examples, like a storyline of self-harshness in your mind? Can you actually call that to mind? And reflect on the vulnerability that underlies it. In the way in which our stories are kind of harsh stories about ourselves, are a way of not fully being vulnerable. That we suffer and our suffering can spill out on others. That we have ideals that we don't meet or are unreachable. There are so many different faces of self-harshness. And we're probably familiar with sort of the critical voice, right? In our mind. That's sort of the most obvious manifestation of it. But we can be harsh in a few ways. We can be oblivious to our well-being. Right? We can be perfectionistic and driving, you know. Can be the rigid discipline that I was talking about with my experience sitting and hurting myself. And we come to meditation practice to get some relief from this, but self-harshness can kind of manifest in our spiritual life too, right? And all of the kind of judging and comparing and assessment, all of the idealism and the measuring of ourselves is a form of harshness. Kind of lack of patience for where we are in our practice. So there, the encouragement is to watch how these themes of being hard with ourselves get come to life in practice. That we're often feeling like we're not enough as meditators, as practitioners, right? I mean, who feels like they're enough, right? Anybody? There's always some sense of not getting something, but we're getting what we got, right? And we can show some tolerance and patience as we grow on this path. I think even sometimes the desire to teach is an expression of our own sense of insufficiency. That we perhaps seek to validate our practice in that way. And so the encouragement is to watch this sense of harshness in all its different guises. And it's so subtle because we take it as given. We just take it as given.
My friend who's my confidant, he's a licensed therapist and analyst, and we've known each other almost our whole lives. And his recommendation to me to improve the quality of my relationships is to be more vulnerable in your relationships. But as soon as I turn on my vulnerability button, that turns on my defenses. So how do you get out of that?
I think we need to kind of pace ourself in how much of our heart we expose. That there can be some sense of kind of rushing to just like and I probably say things that lead to this kind of misconception, that it's just like, okay, here it is. Come what may, I'm going to stay open. And more and more I see that's probably not always skillful. That sometimes it is appropriate just to say, I'm going to open the heart fully and trust that whatever arises will not harm the heart. But need to be careful and need to be sometimes incremental in how much of ourselves we expose, because until we diffuse some of the deep shame, I think we're vulnerable in a way that leaves us unbalanced and potentially very reactive. Does that make sense? And so that's one of the great aspects of Sangha, is that we begin to see ourselves accepted in the eyes of other people. We actually can begin to see that people are looking at us in ways that are more gentle than we look at ourselves. And the experiences that the heart tightens around begin to be normalized. So the practice of actually working with self-judgment can begin with simply acknowledging, like, this is what the mind is doing. You know? Like, when I was sitting in those retreats, it didn't even occur to me that this was a manifestation of real harshness, cruelty with myself. It didn't even register as that. I thought it was healthy discipline or a willingness to sacrifice for practice or dharma or something. Really confused. Yeah. And we have to actually register this self-harshness first. And sometimes simply seeing it is enough. Just seeing that we're living in the shadow of a certain view of ourself is enough. And there's this trust in the Dharma that if we look more closely, the inevitable consequence is more compassion. So we look closely. We really become more and more sensitive to the suffering of the stories of ourself. And begin to perhaps sense some of the innocence that is obscured by these stories. Now, this doesn't mean that we deny harm we've done. That in the Buddhist path, it's this kind of self-love does not actually shy away from seeing the suffering that we've caused. And this may be part of why we're harsh with ourselves. Because we've seen suffering we've caused. And we haven't yet forgiven. And this path is not forgetting. It's actually seeing it more clearly, seeing the harm we've created more clearly, but also seeing how the stories of guilt and shame actually, in some ways, buffer us against a deeper knowing of it. I don't know if that makes sense. The guilt and shame actually buffers us against the heart simply seeing the harm we've caused and saying, like, I don't want to do that. That the intensity of that seeing is buffered by guilt. So we let go of the guilt and we can see more deeply. And we can trust that what arises from that is not guilt and not shame, but a deeper longing not to harm ourselves or others. And so I believe deeply that this kind of self-love can stand the test of looking back on our life unflinchingly. No matter what harm we've caused, I believe this kind of self-love can withstand it. Because what we're beginning to see is that kernel of innocence that's been operating all along. To see the ways in which suffering met with unconsciousness inevitably becomes more suffering. Yeah? there's no other way for it to go. Suffering met with unconsciousness becomes more suffering. But that in no way casts a shadow on this innocence. And so, something begins to dawn on us. That we are actually worthy of love. And as Martin Luther King said, he's not talking about the emotional bosh. Not, this is a very dignified love. And it arises out of simply seeing our capacity to suffer and our capacity for freedom. And it happens on the cushion, and it happens in community, in the eyes of others. That much of the kind of self-hatred arose in relationship to others, and it's healed in relationships. That this kind of we can begin to see ourselves accepted deeply in the eyes of others. Stop and see if there are any comments, questions.
You kept talking about self-harshness.
Yeah.
That you had hurt your back.
Better known as my ass, my sitting bone. Yeah.
Your buttocks with self-harshness. But then when I peel away the onion, why were you being so harsh with yourself? It was ego that you wanted to be a badass motherfucking meditator. And so then you got to look at, why did you have that ego? Why did you have that need to be so badass?
Yeah.
Where do you go from there?
Yeah. It's a great point, and that's a whole nother dimension,
yeah,
I think, of this conversation.
That's when you go into your childhood and you realize your mother didn't love you.
Yeah, Mom. The point you raise is critical, I think, and, you know, at some level, every talk that's ever given up here will return to the theme of the oppressive nature of thinking we're someone. And you're pointing to this. Now, I think there's some place for trying to understand the ways in which we were trying to get some ego need met through self-destructive behavior. But it can get a little bit like quicksand, and it can get ongoing and very tangled and very discursive and story-ish, and that can be a trap. But seeing the kind of burden of the shoulds, of what we think we should be that there's always a burden on the heart. And we need to become more and more sensitive to the very long list of ideas we have about what we should and should not be. Because it is an oppression. You know, I'm using a dramatic word, but I don't think it's overstates it. It's an oppression. And meditation practice is beginning to see the assumptions of what we take ourselves to be. And once we see those assumptions, it doesn't mean we give up being this or that. It just means that we can begin to be free of that burden of living in the shadow of should. And that's a whole nother dimension of how we can work with this experience. I really just want you to be nice to yourselves. I mean, that's really what I've been trying to say. I don't know what I said, but that's really what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
On a practical level, then. It's
yeah.
Like, butt hurts, move
it. Not for a half hour sit. It was like Olympic level stupidity to do what I did. Really. It was. It's amusing to me now, but. You can't hurt yourself probably doing ordinary sitting. This was too much. Plus, I'm really inflexible, and so my posture was not aligned well. And anyway, this is bad PR for meditation, you know. If the pain goes away and once you get up, it's fine. This was actually from the minute I sat down. I was at a very high level of pain, and it was like 5:30 in the morning, and I was going to be practicing till 10 at night. You know, that's not so smart.
Did you have the option of standing?
Yeah. Absolutely. Encouraged to. Staggering, yeah.
I mean, what would a doctor say, really? I mean, like, isn't this a question for a doctor or something? Like, you probably shouldn't sit longer than a certain amount of time.
I'm sure it depends from person to person, but the first principle is don't harm the body. That the Buddha originally thought that there was some redemption in elevating the spirit or something by pushing the body down, not being responsible to its needs. And the middle path is being willing to work with the edge, not itch every time we, you know, want to, but not creating a situation where you're practicing standing meditation, not fun, for 4.5 years. That's not skillful.
Wouldn't it take a certain amount of wisdom to know?
You calling me stupid? Yeah, it does. It does, actually. And blended in with that, my love of the Dharma was a lot of immaturity. And, you know, like one of my teachers said, sometimes nature just ups the ante on the lesson. Like, if you don't learn it, now, okay, fine, but here you go. And so I sort of, that my capacity for harshness with myself was like, okay, this is, you want to live a Dharma life, here's your lesson. It's going to last years, and it has. And I need to fully integrate that into my own heart, my own practice, and I'm trying. But I know some of the same grasping is still present. So we've got to stop. I forgot something. I always forget this too. I forget to give you homework every time. I've been trying to give you homework for a year now, and I forgot. But you have homework if you want it. And this is the homework. I've been doing it. Really interesting. Every time you open or close a door, car door, the door here, that door, refrigerator door, shower door, every time, it's not going to take any time, but every time, contemplate love. And I'm learning a lot about my mind doing this. And you'll start to see when you remember and when you forget, you'll see what you're thinking about, the kinds of moods that make it hard to remember, interactions, right? Like, that door is right there and all 75 of us have to get out of it. But it's going to be hard, actually, because we're going to be in conversation. The mind's going to be leaning forward or back, right? And this is just a way of experimenting with bringing awareness into ordinary activities. So let's just take a moment. May we as individuals, we as a community, allow the heart to soften. To know our vulnerability in a way that opens the heart. In a way that leads to more kindness. And may the benefit of our practice, any freedom that we gain from this practice, may it be shared. That this is the nature of the Dharma, it's to be shared. May this be so.
You have just listened to a podcast from Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society. If you'd like to make a contribution to help support these teachings, please visit againstthestream.org.